This is actually exactly the same talk I gave in the producer session this morning, and I recognize several of you from then. So I'm going to kind of, in recognition of that, open it up so that if anyone has anything they want to discuss or talk about during the presentation, I think we can have the flexibility to do that since a number of you already saw this. David has been involved with this. Gene Stevens, Earl Voorhees, Andrea Jones, Scott Drummond, Ray Benson, Larry Mueller, Ken Suddeth, and Luciana Oliveira was a graduate student who did a lot of the work figuring out our system for translating sensor readings to nitrogen rates. But the things I'm going to cover here, why would you do variable rate nitrogen? Why would you use sensors to do it? How would you interpret the sensor measurements? How do you go from a sensor measurement to a nitrogen rate decision? And then talk a little bit about our first few field scale demonstrations of this technology and finish up with some of the obstacles that remain to really make this mainstream and successful for average producer. In terms of why use variable rate nitrogen, which, you know, if you don't have to mess with it, don't. We're messing with it because we found that there's a couple of situations that mean we need to. One is that optimal nitrogen rate can be very different from one field to another, but also can be very different from place to place within a field. And I started off doing a lot of corn work and discovered that, but was pulled into doing some cotton work by David and some other people starting in 2006. And one thing you'll notice, both 06 and 07, the high numbers were on the clay soils. Needed the most nitrogen there and had the lowest yields there. So that probably neither one is going to surprise you all that much. But it certainly wasn't a case where the ones that had the highest yield needed the most nitrogen. In fact, the highest yielding one in the whole test was this one in the silt loam that didn't need any nitrogen and went down in yield as you applied nitrogen. So optimal end rates went from 0 to 200, and that is the motivation. That's the reason that we need to have something that tells us where do we need more and where do we need less. But it gets more complicated than that. This is research from corn, and we haven't done this with cotton, and I don't know anyone who has, but at least four other states have done this with corn, and four out of five states that have done this have found similar results to ours, which is you need high rates in some places and low rates in others. And these areas up here that are the light gray squares didn't need very much nitrogen. Every one of these gray rectangles got six nitrogen rates, 0 to 250. We had the yields that went with those, and we said, okay, in some places over here, we only needed 60 pounds of nitrogen to make 200 bushel corn. Whereas over here, we maybe only made 180 bushel corn, but we needed 240 pounds of N to do it. It was very different going across that field. But the variability in how much nitrogen was needed was a lot wider than the variability in the plateau yield that you could get across that field. The worst place in the field was 170, the best place in the field was 205 on yield, but you can see the optimal end rates actually, they actually went from 0 to 250. So it covered the whole width of that in that field. And we did eight fields like this, seven of them were as variable as this one. One was about half as variable. Once you figured out, okay, you know, we don't need it. Doing the same thing everywhere is not really the right thing to do for this crop, then you have to come up with a system. How are you going to decide where to put more and where to put less? And we've looked at yield, soil nitrate, soil nitrogen quick test, soil conductivity, and those have all had some positive relationship with where you need to put more and where you need to put less nitrogen, but we're looking at less than 25% of that variability was explained. And we come to crop color, and where everything that I've worked on has been in the half to three quarters range. And so it's the worst case scenario with crop color has been better than the best case scenario with any of these other things. And that's why we're moving forward with that. Well, once you say, okay, crop color is the best thing, well, you've got a range of choices still. You've got aerial photos, you can do it that way. The weakness in aerial photos is that you either need full canopy, or we have done some where we get ultra high resolution and sort out the soil and throw it away, but that's really computer intensive and slow and tedious. And if you don't have full canopy, what do you get? You get a lot of soil showing through that gives you a lot of information on that photo that doesn't have anything to do with the decision you're trying to make. And so once you've got full canopy, an aerial photo will do an excellent job of telling you where you needed more and where you needed less. However, by then it's really too late to be doing what you want to do. Add that in that you get weather delays and processing delays, and it's not a very workable system in a lot of ways. The people that I know that are doing it are using last year's image to help them make decisions, and it's not that that doesn't tell you something, but the one person who's really studied that would say that the places you need the most don't stay consistent from year to year. It depends on the weather and where the water's going and how the water interacts with the soils you've got in that field that tells you where you're going to need the most and where you're going to need the least. You can do it with handheld sensors. It works. My opinion is if you're talking about really managing any kind of land area, it's too slow. It'll do the right job, but it's just hard to cover everything. So applicator-mounted sensors is where we're really putting our effort in Missouri. You don't need full canopy. You put them down close to the crop, and that way that soil impact is lessened when the crop is not yet fully covering the ground. You're just putting it down close enough so it's only seeing one row, and you enrich your signal for the plant and what the plant is doing by doing that. So to me, that's the way to go if you want to come to predicting nitrogen rates. So I really think we've got the variability, and this is the only tool that we've found so far. Now, if someone can come up with a soil test that you can grid sample pre-season and do a really good job, I'm all for it, but our experience is the soil tests haven't done nearly as good a job. Anyone have anything they want to bring up about variability and nitrogen need or how to predict it before we move on? So once you say, okay, color's related, that still doesn't tell you all that much. It doesn't tell you how do you take a number coming out of a sensor and it says, okay, 0.286. What does that mean? How do you know how much nitrogen to put on from that number? It's a very crucial question, and it's a tricky question, and it's one that even how you go about answering it is not real obvious. Our approach in Missouri has been pretty simple and straightforward. We measure in a bunch of different fields how much nitrogen was needed, and in those same fields we measure what did the sensors say, what number was there, and if it was 0.286 and it needed 90 pounds of nitrogen, that's going to go onto a graph, and we put a whole bunch of different fields all into one graph, and we say, what is the relationship between that sensor reading and how much nitrogen was needed? And once we've found a relationship for an existing group of fields, we say, okay, we think we can apply that to other fields in the future. And this is an example of that. So here's some sensor readings here, and here's measured optimal nitrogen rates. We had optimal nitrogen rates that were 0, we had optimal nitrogen rates that were 200, and everything in between, but mostly between 0 and 100. And what we found is, as that sensor reading goes up, the amount of nitrogen goes up. And we found that for all the sensors we worked with. And you take all that data, and there's an equation here that is the mathematical equation making that line, and we're saying we can use that equation as our decision-making tool. That's how we're going to translate a sensor measurement while we're driving through the field into a nitrogen rate. Another thing that you would want to notice from this graph is that this sensor reading is expressed relative to high nitrogen plots. In other words, we couldn't just take the sensor reading by itself. We had to say, how does that compare to an area that got plenty of nitrogen with the same variety in the same field, planted on the same day with same weather? It controls for all of those things, and people have tried and tried to do it without that and basically have never succeeded. So this is a pretty crucial point, and one that really affects the implementation, how you can actually make this work. It's an obstacle, to be truthful about it, but you got to have it, because otherwise, the biggest thing is how much the sensor reading changes as the crop grows. You know, it grows a week, and the number it's going to give is going to be completely different than what it gave you a week ago. And so the absolute number doesn't mean anything. It's just compared to the crop that has enough nitrogen, how's it looking? And if it's not looking the same, that probably means it needs nitrogen. If it's looking the same as the high nitrogen crop, it probably doesn't need much. So we did this with three different sensors, Crop Circle 210, Green Seeker, and Crop Scan, and all three of them gave about the same quality predictions. I think all of them can do an adequate job. None of them stands out as being better than the other ones in terms of predicting the right rate. For all three of them, the 20-inch height worked best. We tried 10, 20, and 40 inches. The manufacturers for the Crop Circle and Green Seeker, which are active light sensors, it bounces a pulsed light down off the canopy and back again. They'll tell you 40 inches. But our numbers say 40 inches doesn't work as well. And, you know, they really set that 40 inches based on minimizing the bounce in the numbers. But you do a better job of diagnosis if you get down closer. And I think that has to do with the soil background and not having that interfere too much. We did this at three stages, early square, mid square, and early bloom. Most of our producers want to start going to early square. That's what we wanted to do. We were skeptical that it would work. It did not work. We did not get a good enough relationship to make good decisions at that point. We already knew from doing some chlorophyll meter work at early flower that probably would work. And we stuck the mid square in there because we wanted to try to see if we could get it to work earlier than early flower, because waiting that long was really not a very good option. And what we found was that did work. That's about, we're looking at 7 to 10 days after the first square. And all through that stage from mid-square to early flower, we're able to get good predictions and use the same equations at both stages. So once you're running, you just do it the same until you're done. The window there is probably, 2 weeks or not a whole lot more. And so it doesn't give you a lot of time, depending on how much you need to get done. Different sensors need different equations. You cannot use the same equation for every sensor. These are the three we worked with. That's the Crop Scan, that's the Crop Circle, and that's the Green Seeker. And if you were using an equation from one of them to make the interpretation on the other one, you'd really get messed up. And that is going to come through later when we talk about some of the new sensors coming on the market. Good question, David. He asked if it's better to have a steep slope or a shallow slope. And, with this one, you've kind of got more sensitivity, the Green Seeker, in terms of it actually changes the sensor reading more, but it also has more noise around that sensor reading. The quality ends up being the same for all of them. You know, some people will act like having a different slope, a steeper or less steep slope is better. I think it just comes down to how good is your prediction, and the answers are all the same, and so I don't think it matters. But the key thing is you can't expect to use an equation from one and just plug it into another and be successful, and that's one problem we're having right now. So we took that research where we got those lines, and we didn't do anything with the Crop Scan in field demos because it's a passive sensor, and it'll work, but the guy just hasn't done the work to get it ready to be a real farm, you know, to use in farm operations. But we did use both the Crop Circle and the Green Seeker, and we use these lines with these equations here in the applicator. So here's one of the applicators we used in the field demo, and it had some sensors up here on the front, and those were feeding signal into the cab of what they were seeing in the crop, and that would calculate a nitrogen rate from the equations that I just showed you on the last slide. And that would then send that rate signal to a controller. I think it was a Viper Pro in this machine. And then the controller would change belt speed to vary the nitrogen rate. And, you know, the sensors are taking about 10 readings a second. I know this year we had three on all of ours. This picture might be from last year. I can't tell if there's two or three on there, but you're getting 20 or 30 readings a second that way with two or three sensors. You average them all, and once a second you send a new signal to the controller. So it's averaging from a pretty good sized area as it runs across the field. This is what we put out on one of the demo fields this year. The Light blue is the producer chosen constant rate. He had 25 pounds out pre and we put on 80 in season. And it was at pretty much a mid-square stage. You saw that on the previous picture, what it looked like when we did it. In this variable rate area, I don't have a scale on here, and I apologize for that, but the blue is kind of 50 to 60 probably, on top of the 25 that he had pre. So we were at a pretty, you know, pretty much what we had set as the bottom rate for this application over much of this plot, except down in this corner. Here we were at the bottom rate over pretty much the whole thing. And over here, we were all over the place, but you know, if you look here, it's low all along and low on this side. And from here on down, we're putting up pretty high rates, and then again up in this northwest corner. So we saved, I don't know, you know, 20 to 25 pounds of nitrogen over here. Here we didn't really change the total amount we used, but we radically redistributed it. Instead of putting it evenly over everything, we put it really strongly in that area and up here and cut back everywhere else. How'd we come out? On pounds of lint over here, we made about an extra 100 with variable rate. Here we lost 80. Here we made 180 more. So that really is what stands out, is that there was one area of the field where we didn't really change our total rate, but we radically redistributed it, and that really helped us out in this season. And we end up, I don't know, what, 100 and some dollars ahead in that particular part of the field. Next field is actually two fields that are both roughly 80 acres. And I think he had 35 down pre, and this is just the in-season rates. So I think his rate ended up being about 80, 85 total, 35 plus this 48, which is all the yellow dots in the squares. And these are the variable rate. And here again, we had, you know, low rates there, high rates there, and the medium rates in between. So we really redistributed it, even though we didn't change our rates much. Same here, except we had a bigger area of the red rates that were high, 85 to 111 in season. Over here, we were actually cutting back mostly on the eastern field and saving some nitrogen, but not much. How'd that come out? Here's an aerial photo taken in August with our results overlaid on it. You can see there's a little bit of thin spots down here, but other than that, it's very uniform and a lot better looking than these other fields up here. Over here, really no change. Over here, really no change. Here, we lost a little bit with the variable, but right here, we made 400 and some extra pounds. And again, it was one of those cases where we put about the same amount on, but we radically redistributed where it went. And so out of these two demos, both sets had a concentrated place where it really worked and it was really profitable, and then a bunch of areas where we were just breaking even. Overall, we came out with an average 73 pound yield increase. And these are the statistics over here. There's a 72% probability that that is real. We reduced nitrogen rate hardly enough to really worry about, but we were very sure that we did. And then overall, we increased net profit by $50 an acre with 80% certainty, which seems like a pretty good deal. Now, I think there's going to need to be a lot more of this before we are confident how many times it wins and how many times it loses. But this year we won, and we won pretty good. Obstacles is one of the most important things here, because, you know, I think in some ways we're there, but in some ways we still have some serious things between us and finally really being able to spread this over a lot of acres. One of the things I don't see changing, although maybe someone else will come up with a way that does work at early square, but we just have not succeeded in doing that. I'm kind of skeptical that it will work. But that puts a limitation on it. You narrow your window up. And we're saying 7 to 10 days after that first square is the earliest we think we can go. High-end reference area is required. Sensor values drift over time. This is a big sleeping giant that a lot of people haven't really recognized, and it can lead you to change nitrogen rates when you shouldn't be doing that, just because the sensor value is different than what it would have been on the same plant 2 hours earlier when you read your high-end reference area. And the last obstacle is these new sensors that are coming out and I think have a lot of potential, but the research base behind them, to me, says they're probably not ready to go to the field. So let's talk about those one at a time. It's not rocket science to say if you're not going at early square, you're narrowing up your window for getting it done. The bad news is there may be some narrowing on the other end too. We have some indications that if at early flower, we can do a great job of predicting how much nitrogen we need, but we may in some cases already lost some yield potential by then. And I know there's a bunch of research out there over the last 30 years talking about timing, and a bunch of it shows no problem with going to early flower. It may be local, it may depend on the system. I'm not real sure, but I worry a little bit about it. It's something that we need to keep our eye on as we move forward with this, is how late can we go with this and not lose any ground with it. The high-end reference area is a hassle. There's just no way around it. Everyone's got enough on their plate getting their logistics taken care of the way things are. You add one more thing, it's a straw that breaks the camel's back, and I've had very poor luck with people who are just kind of doing demonstrations with us, doing their own high nitrogen reference areas. Now, Alan Ballou that I showed you, the 280 side by side, he did his own this year and he did a great job of doing them. But we've had a whole bunch of people who said, oh yeah, I'd like to try that and I'll put the reference area out, and then they don't get around to it because everything else is making them money and that's the thing they're just trying out. And so it's really, it's hard to get people to do this with good reason. To me, we had one guy who just called up his aerial applicator and said, can you just go to, and he named off the 8 fields that he wanted done, and in 2.5 hours, all of them had a reference area in them, and he didn't have to haul anything around anywhere. I had to pay a bill, and it was a fairly substantial bill, but I think in terms of taking away the obstacles to making this work, that's how it's going to happen. The one that I'm really worried about is the sensors drifting over time. With the Green Seeker, those people are aware of the fact that it changes and they think it's temperature sensitivity, and they're going to try to introduce a correction. They've already got a temperature sensor inside the thing, and they're just saying, we just need to take the information from that sensor and introduce a correction, and that might work. I don't know. We'll have to see. Leaf wetness is one thing that we know changes it. We can have a sensor mounted over a plant, go out there and spray some water on the leaf, and the number's going to change. It's going to look darker and like it is more nitrogen sufficient when it's got water on it. Same thing when we've left them out sometimes in the rain, and same thing happens. So, and then if it's dew in the morning and it dries off, the same thing will happen again. It's going to actually start looking lighter. Then there's a whole bunch that we don't really know why. We know that we see a whole bunch of variability and we're not sure what the reason is. I'm thinking that, you know, you get these hot days and the plants don't look, they wilt a little bit as the day goes on, and that's going to change the number that the sensor is going to give you. Green Seeker, as I told you, is the worst, and what happens with that, if you take the NDVI, which is just probably their number one index that they like to put out from there, it starts off high in the morning, goes down lowest in midday, and goes back up again in the evening, and that's where they think it's a temperature sensitivity, but it's something that it's sensitive to, but that instrument's changing over time. And when we look at how much does that change in nitrogen rate, if we take anchor it at, say, 80 in the middle of the day and then say, how much would it change if we went to morning and evening, we're looking at going up to 125 in the morning and maybe 115 or 20 in the evening. 35 to 45 pound change just because how much the sensor changed on that same plant. Now, actually, we've done a lot of this with a different index, and it's usually a little more accurate than the NDVI is in terms of predicting nitrogen rate. But the reason this goes all the way up to 350 is there's another graph in this same series where, you know, it's up at 300 and 80 and 300, and that's how sensitive that index is to this drift during the day. And one of the reasons we're saying, okay, let's not use that one after all. It's a little more accurate, but this drift thing just kills it. What's the solution? You got to keep going back to the high-end control and reading that, because whatever's making it change, it's going to change there and in the rest of the field where you're fertilizing. I would say you need to do it at least every 2 hours, and probably the most convenient, I mean, one way to do that would be just kind of space high nitrogen areas, so every, you figure about every 2 hours you're going to hit a new one, and you can just read it in. Go ahead, Glenn. Yep, you're going to see that in a couple of, in a minute. And that's my favorite solution. I think that makes things a lot easier. The Green Seeker, because it drifts more, I'd probably want to do it every hour. And that's the one that's really out there and available. And, you know, that's a big obstacle to go back and check the high-end reference area every hour, almost no matter how you do it, except with the crosswise strips. And so it's a problem. Now, that perpendicular to rows and updating every time you cross it actually makes it pretty easy. Green Seeker did introduce a thing this year where they have the capability of sticking a map in the computer that's controlling it. And they cannot yet do this, but it's not a very big programming step to go from having map capabilities to making that map be a map of your high-end reference strip and updating it every time you drive across it. So we've got a programmer who is great, and that's why we're able to do this stuff. We're actually, you know, several steps ahead of them on a lot of this stuff, but this is a corn example, and you can see that there's a couple of darker strips, one running right there and one running right there. This is just about knee-high corn. There's still a lot of soil showing through, as you can see, but every time we were driving with the sensors down the length of the field applying nitrogen, we'd cross that high nitrogen reference strip, and we set it so that about every, so that the last four times we'd crossed it were averaged together, and that's what we were using. And, you know, if it takes you, say 8 minutes to go the length of the field, you know, that's about for the last half hour is when your value that you're using has been collected. So this guy put it on with his ground rig, two passes, 60 feet wide, I think. You're not gonna get people to go out there and do crosswise ground rig reference strips on all their fields, period. And then you get people who are growing cotton, a lot of them are ridge till, furrow irrigated, and forget that. But a plane is, again, a great way to get this done. New sensors, the Ag Leader has the same designer as the Crop Circle 210. AGCO and TopCon is an updated version of the Hedro or Yara N sensor. And so they're both, but it's very different. That's its lineage, but it's not really similar. I think both of these are gonna be good. I think the engineering behind them is good, but the research base isn't there yet to know how to turn a sensor reading into an N rate. And that's a serious obstacle. And Ag Leader is releasing the sensor, but it's based on totally different wavelengths than this one was, and they're trying to use the same equation that we developed for this one, and I'm scared that that's not going to work and people are going to have a train wreck, and I don't want to see that happen. So I think it's going to be a good sensor, but I think they need to get a little research base underneath them. Summary, optimal nitrogen rate varies widely from one field to another, but also from place to place within a field. That means we've got a problem to solve because we're not doing that. We're not recognizing that and managing that. In the research we've done, crop color is the best way to tell where to put more and where to put less. Logistically, crop sensors are the best way to measure that crop color as an indicator of nitrogen status. The translation from the sensor values to N rates is the hardest part and something that a lot of people are working on and that is not yet settled in terms of what's the best way to do it. We have come up with an interpretation that we feel is at least pretty good, and we've gone out and put it in the field. This year in three fields we increased yield, did not have much impact on nitrogen rate, but increased profit by a fair amount. Notice that does not count the sensor cost, and if you're paying $20,000 for a rig and running it over 1,000 acres, you got to somehow make $20 an acre over the lifetime of the machine. Well, as it turns out, we made $50 an acre already this year, and we would have, if we'd done that over 1,000 acres, we would have paid for the sensors and probably, you know, the management time is really an issue too. I mean, it takes quite a while for someone to learn how to use these and do a good job and not take unnecessary risks. I think we need more field tests, and we've still got some obstacles, but my thought is, you know, maybe not 2010, but 11, 12, I think we're about ready to really have this become a widespread technology that we use for improving our management. And that's everything I've got. Thanks for your time.
We do have time for questions.
Right.
When you're dealing with soils that are highly variable,
Right.
You're going to have variation in plant height at the time you run this sensor. How much of an influence is this height above canopy in your regression equations that you use for making your nitrogen rate recommendation?
Well, that's a pretty complicated question. I'll try to say it back a little bit. Basically, you're saying you got a big field, you got a bunch of soil types, you go across it, and the plant are being shorter and taller just because of the soil that they're on. And I'm going to say, you know, if they're shorter and taller because the nitrogen supplying capabilities of the different soils is different, the shorter plants are going to get a higher dose based on the sensor response curve. And if they're shorter because they don't have as much nitrogen, because that soil is not supplying as much, that's appropriate. Now, the thing that you'll get into where it's not appropriate is you're in a wetter area of the field. It's not drained as well. The soil temperature is lower. And because the soil temperature is lower, everything happens slower, and it's just not as far progressed. And we have done some stuff. I mean, you can as long as you've got a nearby high nitrogen reference, that's still going to account for, okay, this is growing slower, and the reason it's smaller and lighter is because it's at an earlier stage, not because it doesn't have enough nitrogen. And so if you got a nearby reference, it'll tell you. Now, how are you going to get a nearby reference in all those places? Well, maybe you do a good job of planning because you know where your wet spots are, and you put a separate little, you know, just an area the size of this room or smaller out there as your reference for that part of the field. We've done a thing where we will drive four strips through the field, and then we'll actually, with high nitrogen, and then we'll sense all four of them, and then we'll extrapolate that out across the field to make a map of expected color for the high nitrogen area, because it's not the same everywhere. And that's kind of what you're pointing out, is the high nitrogen strip may be not as dark because it's in a wetter, cooler part of the field. And that's a ways down the road before we're really ready to do that, you know, for any producer. But you've identified a real issue. There is a solution for it, but it's not easy, and we're not quite ready to do it. Glenn's saying, well, too bad the sensor can't sense and keep it at the same height. And actually, it can. I mean, there's boom controls out there now that are sonar, ultrasound, whatever, and you can tell how far down it is to the plants, and you can adjust the boom up and down, and they're doing that with sprayers. But I'm concerned that would actually make our decision worse, because part of the, you know, when you don't have enough nitrogen, it being shorter is one of the things that happens. That's part of our diagnostic. It's just that when it's shorter for some other reason, that throws us off. And so if we're able to control for that by having our high nitrogen strip in strategic areas, maybe we can figure that out without having that problem. But I wouldn't really want to be moving the boom up and down as the cotton height went up and down, because I feel like that takes away part of our power of diagnosis. Say that again. When we drive across them, the ones that are perpendicular to the rows, our software does. We wrote our own software to do that. The companies do not have software that does that yet. However, the way we do it, we make a map. We have a map capability in there. And on the map, it shows where that high nitrogen referencing is. It's all GPS. We know exactly where it is. And it's every second, as we're driving through the field, it's saying, am I in that zone? Am I in that zone? Am I in that zone? No. Am I in that zone? No. Am I in that zone? Yes. Okay, now I'm going to start logging to keep track and add that to the pile of numbers I'm using as my reference. We've done that programming. To do that, you have to have a map capability, which GreenSeeker has just introduced. I can't remember if it was in last year, but it's certainly in this year. They've got the map capability. They still do not have the capability to put in a reference as your map and to update your reference based on that map. But the fact that they have a map capability means it's not very far to go to get to that. If they hear us talk about it, hear someone else talk about it, decide they're gonna do it, you know, in 3 days of programming, they'd have it. It's not hard.
I got a question on the high end strip. So much of this seems to bounce on that. You talked about the drift, the perpendicular. how you actually come up with what rate you use for your high end. And this is what I'm thinking, is that, you know, say we think 100 pounds is enough. I think what we do is we say we want to make sure we know, so we put 150.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 150 really wouldn't it, I'm thinking it would be better have, if you somehow could know what the real optimum economic, you see what I'm saying? The 150 might be too far.
Well, and that...
Is that how, I'm not even sure how you come up with your rate for your high end screw.
Well, that's a good concept, but let's kind of circle backwards. If you say the best thing would be to have your optimum rate as your reference, well, if you're having your optimum rate as your reference to figure out your optimum rate, well, if you already knew it, you wouldn't need the sensor, right? So
it's the optimum rate for that spot, I guess.
So a high rate is you know what it is ahead of time. An optimum rate, you don't know what it is ahead of time. So you're kind of stuck. And one of the things about our approach is it gives you the flexibility to say, you know, this high end is actually too dark. The equation could come out saying that not only do we need zero when it looks like that high end area, but we need zero when it even looks a little bit lighter than that high end area. The flexibility is there in our approach to let that happen. It didn't happen. It happened the other way, that it says if it looks like the high end area, we still better put 30 on, because sometimes it's going to need more. It's going to run out sometime later, even though it looks great right now. That was the outcome of the research. But there were, with the design of the research, would have allowed it to say, you know, the high rate is actually too dark. It's darker than we want it to be, and we can back off on that color and still need nothing. And we would have been able to find that.
So in other words, you don't take the optimum and just double it or something.
Well, what we've had some stand problems on some of the high nitrogen areas that we put out. And I don't know why. To me, it's really strange that you put out, I mean, we put out 180 or something, and we'd lose a third of our stand. And it would just be repeatable, plot after plot and some small plot stuff. So what I say now is, take what the producer's normal rate would be and add total season long rate, add 30 to that, and that's your pre-plant reference area. Now, you have to be sensible about it, and if you had a boatload of rain between then and when you do your application, realize that maybe it's no longer a high-end reference area, and don't bet the farm on it. Okay, here's the question. If you got an area with a stand problem, you go across it, the green seeker sees less greenness, and it's going to jack the rate up. One, you're exactly right. Two, I don't know what the companies are exactly doing about that. Three, it's a very solvable problem. I mean, you've got a machine whose whole thing is to see how green it is. What we do now, we're going to change it again this year, but first thing we do when we pull into a field is measure bare soil. We try to get it with whatever is representative of any residue that happens to be there, because that'll change the number too. And then we go a certain distance off from that, and any number that comes in like bare soil or even kind of close to bare soil, we pitch it. Now, that's our personal program. I don't know what the companies are doing. I don't know that they're doing that yet, but we get rid of it so we're not using useless information in making the rate decision. But then you've got the question, and then we also have a thing where if we're getting less than 30, I think, or 40% plants showing up, if we say, you know, over the last 3 seconds, less than 30% of the readings indicated a plant, we just cut it to zero. Now, and you can do that reasonably successful with dry, less so with liquid. I mean, if you have a big bare spot, which we've run into that. I've been kind of embarrassed because exactly what we go across a big bare spot, and it, I'm sitting there riding in the cab with the guy, and the end rate's up to what we've said is the maximum on a big bare spot where everything drowned out. And it's embarrassing. It's motivated me to try to come up with a better system for that. And so, you know, we keep refining it, but what we're thinking of this year is take whatever the sensors recommend for the plants that are there and multiply it by the percent stand. So in other words, if it's recommending putting on 120, but you got a 50% stand, multiply that 120 by half and put on 60 instead, because you're only supplying half as many plants. Now, on the other hand, they may be compensating somewhat, getting bigger individually, and maybe you won't need more than that. I don't know. It's something we're wrestling with, and I am not informed about what the companies are currently doing about that. But it's another obstacle that I didn't put up there that's important. I mean, most of the time, it's probably not that big of a deal because, you know, what we hope is that we mostly have most of our fields with good enough stands that that's not a major issue. If it is a major issue, the biggest problem is how to get a better stand, not how to adjust the nitrogen. But meanwhile, along the way, we really ought to not throw nitrogen where it's not needed. And yeah. Right. That can happen with the simple linear graph that I showed you to interpret. It's going to happen. We need to come up with a strategy to get around it, and it's very doable with these instruments because they know it's not a plant. If you do a little bit of work to help them.
Okay. On your soil, do you think salt toxicity is the high rates pre-plant?
Say that again. Well, the question was whether or not the high rate is causing toxicity. And some of the times when we, not every time, but sometimes when we put out quite high rates, like, you know, nearly double what the producer would normally do, I'd have to say yes, it did, because repeatedly the stand wasn't there. I mean, it was 2/3 of a stand, and that's terrible, and, you know, that's going backwards. And so it's very important to have the high nitrogen areas work out so that they're not causing any toxicity or problems. And our experience was, yeah, we saw some of that. I'm used to working with corn on this stuff, and you never see that there. But with cotton, it's a lot more sensitive, I think.
Well, I like the philosophy of affecting bare soil. Where in Mississippi Delta, we have spot after spot fields that are affected by lightning strike.
Uh-huh.
And if you go across the sensor across the lightning strike area, you have zero cancer.
Right. Well, but what I'm saying is you can tell that there's nothing alive there and just throw it away if you've got it set up right. But the other thing that will happen is you go across a delta field and it goes from sand to gumbo, and, you know, the soil, you know, you measure bare soil once when you pull into the field. Well, which one do you measure? Now, and one of the things some people are doing, although it requires more investment, is put a sensor between the rows and a sensor over the rows, and the one between the rows, you know, tells you what the color of the soil behind you is doing. Now, exactly how you use that becomes very tricky. You know, that's a tough question, but the concept is there that you can do something to change the fact that the soil color behind the plant is varying as you go across the field. Even if it's the same soil, you know, if it's real flat and you've got 6 inches of elevation difference, the 6 inches lower may be a lot wetter and therefore a very different color, even though it's the same soil. So there's a lot more that can be done. We're not done figuring this out by any means.
So we're going to turn at 3:15, and we're going to invite everybody to visit our closure session 3:15 to 4:15, where the office will be present there. Peter,